Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
The talk about face masks, N95 at the top of the list. Then there's a level 1 and a level 2 and a level 3. You see the social media about it'll hurt you if you wear a mask. A lot of experts disagree with that. Among them, Dr. Joseph Chang, who is the chief medical officer for the Parkland Health System in Dallas. I guess the first question, Dr. Chang, is who should wear a mask?
Listen, Mitch, it's a very important question. You know, I've heard from so many people that, oh, you know, I don't think I should wear a mask. I don't think I can wear a mask. Listen, the answer to that is actually pretty simple. Unless you have a breathing disorder that makes it so you have trouble breathing just on a normal basis, or you have a mental disorder that makes it so any sort of covering on your face triggers that. Barring those situations, pretty much everyone else should be in a mask. The other big group of folks that we are a little bit more careful with masks is with young children. And that's mainly because the mask sizing is not for children. The masks that are out there are for adult faces, and then there is a sort of danger of suffocation at that point for the younger children.
All right, that being said, what kind of mask? I mean, does it have to be an N95? Can you use a bandana?
Well, listen, if I were to boil this down real simple, the best mask to wear is the one that's on your face. And I'm not trying to be funny. I mean, honestly, anything that covers your face is better than nothing. So that I would not use that as a reason at all for anyone to say, well, since I can't get the best kind of mask, I won't wear any kind of mask. Anything that can cover your face is better than nothing. Now, that being said, we do know that even what we call level 1 masks or level 2 masks that you can find at like CVS or Walgreens, hey, that's not an N95, but that's plenty good. We would consider cloth masks level 1 masks, and just for reference, sort of the rating of masks sort of goes from 1 to 3, and then there's the N95 that's above that, okay? So just for reference, that's what that means. So we would consider cloth masks level 1. But even level 1 masks are very effective. So if I were to give your listeners sort of a idea of how effective we're talking about, I've said this in many different outlets now. These are science numbers. They are undisputed. If there are two people facing each other within a close distance, let's just say a couple feet, if one of them has COVID and neither one has a mask on, you're talking about a transmission rate of about 90%. That means you're probably going to get it, okay? If the person who does not have COVID puts on a mask, that drops that rate to about 60 to 70% rate of transmission, okay? If only the person who has COVID puts a mask on, that drops that transmission percentage down to 20 or 30%. If both people have masks on, it drops the transmission rate to 1% or less. So the very simple act of putting a mask on everybody drops the chance of transmission from 90% to 1%. That is science and undisputed. Everyone needs to be in a mask.
A lot of people say they're not going to wear a mask. They just say, I'm not going to do it. What do you say to the naysayers?
Now, look, not everyone can associate with being a doctor. I get that. So when we talk about, oh, look at all of the people in the hospital and things like that, people don't see that. That's not in their experience. I understand that. But you know what? Everyone is a friend. Everyone is a family member. I am a father. I am a husband. I'm a son. The danger is not necessarily to you. It's what you might take to others. That's really the thing that I wish that people would remember and think about. If that is really what you're doing, you're affecting your neighbor. We're at a place in our society now where all kinds of things, you know, are going on. But we need to be able to look at each other in the eye and say, for your health, I am willing to put this piece of paper on my face or this piece of cloth on my face. And I trust that you, for my health, you care enough about me that you would simply put a covering on your face. That's what we really need to get to as a society, that we can look at each other and say, I will protect you by doing this very simple thing. And as far as is this real, let me just give you some examples of what's going on just in terms of pure numbers and put it in some sort of perspective. If I'm to look 4 weeks ago, and these are facts, again, these are undisputed, these are firsthand facts from my own hospital system. So I'm not getting this information from anywhere else. This is not rumor. This is my own data. About 3 to 4 weeks ago, we were starting to do what we call asymptomatic testing, so testing of people who don't have symptoms. We were finding that about 0.7% of the people that were testing with no symptoms were coming up positive with COVID and able to give it to other people. So 0.7%, just so we put that into perspective for DFW. DFW is almost 5 million people. It's about 4.8 million people at the last census and the last count. That translates into roughly around 50,000 people, 40-some thousand people. Today, in less than 4 weeks, I'm looking at an asymptomatic rate of almost 8%. So that is 10 times what it was before. So now we are looking at, around DFW, 300 to 350,000 people who are walking around with COVID-19 that don't know it. I want to stress that again. That is 350,000 people walking around DFW who do not have symptoms. So not only do you not know who they are, they don't know who they are. Okay, now if we were to bring this down to the level of just sort of your close friends, right? If I'm talking about a close to 8% positive rate for COVID-19 for people who do not have symptoms, that means if you get in a gathering of 12 people, there will be one in there that has COVID. That is a small group of people. If you just look at and think about sort of what is our typical party that we have, you know, at our home or we go out somewhere, that's maybe 20 or 30 people. That means that in that group, Mitch, there are two that have COVID that don't know they have COVID, and you don't know who they are. That's pretty significant. So I would say to the folks that feel like, you know what, this is not going to hit me. This is not real. This is not out there. Just think about that. If you get in a group with a little more than 10 people, one of them will have it. And if you don't have a mask on, or they don't have a mask on, is that something you want to take a risk for? That's the question I would have for folks.
COVID-19, a coronavirus, not the first one, maybe not the last one. But tell us about it. What are we dealing with here?
Well, it is different. And that's the main thing that's really got us so concerned. I've personally received those questions as well, Mitch, about, you know, why didn't we hear so much about SARS? Why didn't we hear so much about H1N1, et cetera, et cetera? Well, there are several reasons for that. Number one, SARS, H1N1, MERS, these big ones that across the world had quite an effect, didn't really penetrate into America very much. You know, they for some reason, those viruses either burned out before they were able to travel to our country or this hemisphere, or for some reason they controlled it well enough in those areas that it wasn't able to spread. So there's a reason we didn't hear so much about those. Okay, so that's one thing. Number two, the fact that we didn't hear about something like SARS doesn't mean that it was not a serious problem. It just wasn't a serious problem here in America. In sort of my home country of Taiwan, where my parents live, SARS was a gigantic problem. A huge proportion of the population came down with it, and as a result, they've all been wearing masks. Let's get back to our topic, right? They've all been wearing masks in public for years and years now as a result of that. It's something they learned. And as a result, Taiwan is one of the countries that has a very dense population that really has very few cases and then almost no deaths because they've been wearing masks from the very beginning. The other thing that I hear a lot, and you alluded to, is, well, why is this? Why don't we hear, you know, about the flu? Well, in large part, we have a lot of treatments for the flu. We have an acute treatment called Tamiflu that shortens the course of the disease and really makes it much more mild. And of course, the biggest thing that's the difference is we have a vaccine for the flu. I know that there are sort of criticisms of the vaccine and it's not perfect, but it's certainly a whole lot better than no vaccine. And so that's one of the problems with COVID is that we know little enough about it that we really don't know what to do to make it better rather than keep, you know, aside from keeping people alive until their bodies naturally get better. And that's the scary thing. I appreciate, you know, as part of the, your question, you sort of alluded to the fact that the symptomology really does range from no symptoms at all to rapid deterioration and death in less than a week. That's true for this virus. And we don't see that with the other viruses, namely the flu that everyone wants to talk about. We really don't see that. So it is different. We don't understand it completely. And I think that's what really drives a lot of our concern.
Now, you've seen it on social media, medical skeptics, and some of them are doctors, PhDs, MDs, retired neurosurgeons, all kinds of folks who talk about the dangers of wearing a mask.
Well, listen, I have to say, number one, that social media is probably one of the worst sources for good information, just in general. I do have to put that out there, fully acknowledging, obviously, that the entire internet or social media is certainly not bad, but it is sort of fraught with that information. So I still will put that out there that folks please go to more sort of established and reputable sources for information, such as the Centers for Disease Control .gov website. So I would put that out there for one. Number two, I obviously as well have seen all over social media various folks with various credentials coming out and saying, you know, multiple things about their personal experience or their personal thoughts on, you know, what masks may have drawbacks of masks, what, you know, may be. But I would say this. No one disputes, again, I'll go back to what I said earlier. No one disputes the fact that masks decrease infection. No one disputes that. No one disputes that masks prevent mucus from sort of being ejected all over the environment and atmosphere. No one disputes that. There are certain facts that can be sort of cherry-picked to make one's narrative appear one way or another. And let me just address a couple of those that you sort of mentioned. One is, well, masks are dirty. Well, masks are dirty. No one said that, you know, a mask used over and over, days and days and days, don't get dirty. Of course they do. So no one is suggesting that you should use a mask, you know, for instance, every day for a week and not replace it. That no one suggested that's the right way to use a mask. And in fact, we do advise people, if you're going to use a reusable cloth mask, that that be washed regularly. And by regularly, I mean daily, or certainly at least once every couple of days. The idea that masks make it hard to breathe. Listen, again, at the very top, we talked about there are certain individuals where wearing a mask can be detrimental to them. But that is the vast minority of individuals. Okay, so those are two big sort of arguments that sort of have been made regarding, oh, the detriment of masks. But again, that's cherry-picking information. That's taking the minority of times and making that the main event, and it really isn't. The other thing that I kind of say, you know, people don't know, but my background is as a gynecologic surgeon. That's what I did for my clinical career for decades. And this is kind of a joke, but it's kind of true. Masks decrease my ability to breathe. My gosh, there would be hundreds of thousands of surgeons across the country that would be passing out while they were doing their operations. I mean, it's just not true. We just don't see that. I don't know what else to say to refute some of those things, but at least that's one example.
And what about the hindsight on this? I recall earlier this year, January, February, and March, we were hearing, oh, you don't need to wear a mask. And then by May and June, wear a mask anywhere you go. What's your take now?
Yeah, and Mitch, that's exactly right. Look, and I've had this sort of conversation a lot too, you know. I'm not a big sort of hindsight, Monday morning quarterback kind of individual. I feel like, you know, we as scientists always have to be modifying what we think and what our beliefs are and understanding is as the data comes in to prove or disprove things. Science has always been that way. Things that we thought were true 300 years ago are not, we are not true now by demonstrable fact. And if we were to just hang on to things that we knew in the past, well, we really wouldn't move forward very well. Part of the reason why there were and have been conflicting sort of messages regarding the best ways to prevent catching this particular virus is that at the beginning, certainly January, February, even March time, we had really very little idea of how this virus was transmitted. I mean, we've heard all kinds of things running the gamut from, you know, this transmits in an aerosol way like TB, to it can be transmitted through all kinds of other bodily fluids, et cetera, et cetera. And we've all seen those results. But as our understanding of this virus has gone on in time, we are more and more convinced as a scientific community that really the primary, secondary and tertiary way that this virus is transmitted is by respiratory droplets. You know, we now are pretty sure of that as a scientific community. 3 months ago, 4 months ago, we really were not sure of that at all. And so certain kinds of masks, certain techniques wouldn't protect at all against, for instance, an airborne disease like tuberculosis. But as a respiratory disease like the flu, respiratory transmitted droplet disease like the flu, masks now become very effective. So it's one of those things that, just as you pointed out, we can't hold what once was true sort of now as hold us responsible for what we once thought, because our understanding has changed, and obviously our recommendations have to change along with that.
And then there is the order that was issued by Dallas County Judge Clay Jenkins and the Parkland Hospital System, and the headline on the order says, negative COVID-19 test not required for people to return to work, with an exception for hospital and healthcare personnel. So help us understand that.
Yeah, that's an interesting one, Mitch. And I think what that really comes down to is this. And we've talked a lot about already during our 20 minutes or so here about what we do and don't know about the virus. Okay, one of the things that's interesting from a medical standpoint, a scientific standpoint about this virus, is that lab positivity meaning the PCR test that is done for diagnosis. Lab positivity for people who have been previously infected with the virus can last up to months. Okay, so we have found, certainly in our experience here at Parkland, and reports obviously in the scientific literature, that up to 3 months down the road, a person can still be positive on their test. Okay, and that's because the PCR test that we use, especially the really sensitive ones like the one we use here at Parkland, it can pick up virus at such a low level that you remain positive. The science behind what we call the PCR assay is able to actually replicate dead virus. So virus that's not doing anything, it's just kind of sitting there. We can pick that up now on these really sensitive tests, and now that becomes a quote-unquote positive test, even though that virus is just sitting there, not doing anything. Okay, so the sort of reliability of a positive or negative test in the situation where someone who has had the disease, gotten better, no longer having any symptoms, no longer have any fever, that test doesn't really give us the information that we need. Does that make sense? So that's why this proclamation or whatever has been put out there, because this is just one of those things that we found out about the virus, that we can have positive tests for months and months, but that doesn't really speak to the infectivity. We know that people are infectious when they cough and they sneeze, and that's really when they're infectious. And when those symptoms are no longer present, certainly on the order of weeks and months, that person really isn't infected anymore, or are they infectious. Now, there, as you'll probably have noticed, there are exceptions to that proclamation or that quote-unquote rule, and that is in certain situations, like if you work in assisted living facilities, nursing homes, healthcare organizations, things like that. And the reason for that is, again, because we don't know absolutely what is going on with this virus, that's an extra layer of caution. Does that make sense? So for certain situations, like if you're going into high-risk situations where you can infect other people, then we simply ask for a even extra layer of surety if we can. And so that's why you'll see some of those exceptions. So a lot of the policies are sort of based on sort of partial information and partial understanding, if you will, of the virus itself. Since we don't know 100% what we're dealing with, we have to do the best that we can with the information that we have. So that's why that reads the way it does.
Everybody is asking, how much longer do we have to deal with this?
Herd immunity is a difficult thing. We do know from vaccination studies that if we don't get the herd, quote unquote, the community, up to at least 70 to 80% immune, then we know that what happens is the virus and infections can more easily invade that community. Okay, and most recently, there's a whole other topic, but just as an example, most recently we've seen an uptick in measles around the country. Certain hotspots, Austin, Texas, is one of them. Just to talk to our speak to our own state, but certain areas of the country, measles penetration has occurred because the vaccination rates have dropped so low in those places. And so we do know that 70 to 80% is the appropriate immunity in a community before we can start to feel confident that there's this protective effect. And the way herd immunity works, just for your listeners, is that if enough people around you are immune to a disease, even if you are not, the disease has a lot of trouble transmitting into you because everyone around you is immune, and that's the whole idea of herd immunity. 70 to 80% isn't even enough. I mean, really, to be really safe, you need your penetrance to be well over 90% for the vaccine and immunity. So 70 to 80 is sort of the bare minimum. Now, from our standpoint, I just sort of relay to you in a different context that really our positivity rate, we believe, is still going to be less than 10% at this point. So we're nowhere near that. To get that naturally, we'd have to have a situation like Northern Italy, where basically everybody got it. and tons of people didn't survive. That's the only way you can naturally get that kind of immunity. So really, for that level of herd immunity to occur, we would need a vaccine. And we would need a vaccine that's effective. And then we'd need everybody to get it.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.